Again, we'll be in the book of Job, chapter 9, starting with verse 1.
But what I want to say about the book of Job, it is so mislabeled to the church world. The church world says that Job is a book of poetry. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Solomon are books of poetry. I got to say, excuse me, but somebody lying to you. These are books of wisdom, not poetry. This is a book of wisdom. Who wrote that book? This book of Job was the first book that was ever written. It's the oldest book of the Bible. It was put in the positions in because somebody put it there. But most of these other books were written by Solomon, who was the oldest and wisest man. He was considered the wisest man of the Bible. So why would you call it except to take your vision away from the truth of it? But Job is a book of humanity. It's all it is. And the name of this book, I could go around and say it belongs to Benjamin, Jesse, Barb. I could go right around the room and name everyone. And that, when you read it, that's who that is. Job is you. You got to learn that this book is not written for everybody. It's written for first fruit sons of God. And it's written about your life. It's written about experiences that they had. And Paul helped enlighten us by writing and saying everything that happened to them was written for our learning and instruction. Everything that happened to Job was written for who? For us. So when I see the situation Job was in, now I don't live in a time, none of us do, where everybody has sheep and goats in the front yard or the living room. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about taking the situations that happened to him, the positions he was put in, and then take them and transfer them into our age in our lifestyle. And now, how do I answer that? If I see what he did and how he responded, then that will give me some kind of wisdom on how to respond when that circumstance comes in my life. Does that make sense to you? See, because God makes sense in what he does. He doesn't just say a bunch of words and say, well, it's spiritual and it went over your head. Someday maybe you'll get it. I've heard a lot of preachers say things like that. Yeah, it was just too spiritual. It went over your head, but someday you'll catch hold of it. No, if you can't understand this, it's not for you. You hear me? I'm serious. If you can't understand it, then you need to dig deeper because it's here for you. It's written so simple that a child can understand it. And we are children, are we not? It has nothing to do with chronological age or physical size or anything like that. We are spirit, but we are spirit children of the one Almighty God. Can you agree with that? So what we have to do is understand, how do I translate this life of this person called Job? And every time I go to it, and every time I see the word Job, I think of Larry Cupp. He's passed on now. And the first time I used a reference out of the book of Job, he said, I never would read that book because I always thought it meant job. It was job and I didn't want one. I think about him this morning. I think about him every time I open this book about Job because of that. And he was making fun because Larry was a fun-loving person. It's a serious book and it'll seriously help you learn to deal with your situations of life. That's what this book is all about. It's not about history. It's not some fairy tale somebody made up. I mean, Lois and I saw some things last night on TV, and I didn't feel like watching TV, she was flashing to it. She said, there's something about something forbidden from the Bible. I said, turn that back and let's watch a little bit. A little bit is about all we could watch. Went click, let's go upstairs, go to bed. I mean, just so ridiculous the things that they say about God's Word. They have no understanding. They're speaking from carnality. And, you know, I try to listen to try to understand where they're at. And it's just so, it just so sickens my spirit that I just have to just turn it off and go away from it. Yeah, I do the best I can with it, and I can't take no more of it. We just quit and left. Okay, so let's go ahead and start with Job now, chapter 9, verse 1. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who has hardened himself against him and has prospered, which removes the mountains and they know not, which overturns them in his anger, which shakes the earth out of her place and the pillars thereof tremble, which commands the sun, and it rises not, and seals up the stars, which alone spreads out the heavens and treads upon the waves of the sea, which makes Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south, which does great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. Lo, he goes by me, and I see him not. He passes on also, but I perceive him not. Behold, he takes away. Who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, what doest thou? If God will not withdraw his anger, the proud helpers do stoop under him. How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? Whom, though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. If I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice. For he breaketh me with the tempest and multiplies my wounds without cause. He will not suffer me to take my breath, but fills me with bitterness. If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong. And if of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, my own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, I shall also prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my life. This is one thing, therefore I said it. He destroys the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slays suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covers the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Now my days are swifter than the post. They flee away. They see no good. They are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagles that haste to the prey. If I say I will forget my complaint, I will leave off my heaviness and comfort myself. I am afraid of all my sorrows. I know that you will not hold me innocent. If I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shall thou plunge me in the ditch, and my own clothes shall abhor me. For he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him, and we should come together in judgment. Neither is there any daysman betwixt us that might lay his hand upon us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him, but it is not so with me. Boy, there's a lot of stuff in here. You're going to have to excuse me because I've got to sit down a little bit for a moment. Okay? Back to the first part of the chapter again. We know Job's talking to one of his friends, right? Bildad. And Bildad means what? Confusing love. He's confused in love. And see, that's where we see the church realm. They say they love you so they can condemn you. When someone comes there and says, now you know I love you, but it's not love. If I love you, do you know it? I don't even have to tell you. You'll know I love you. If there's no question in your mind at all about it. If you love someone, they should know it. It's wonderful to hear someone say, I love you. Those are wonderful words. But they don't have to be spoken to know it. And if you have to say it for someone to know it, then I really doubt whether it was. Yeah, there's a doubt in there when I think you have to hear it to make sure it's real. Okay? It's good to be reinforced. Okay? But anyway, Bildad's talking and Job's returned his language to him now. And he says, then Job responded and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? Literally the Almighty. He said, how will man be just with God? Now this I told you was a book, it was the oldest book of the Bible. So it was written before the new covenant comes along. It's written before the law came. So how could possibly humanity understand anything about God if God had not yet communicated himself to man? Someone give me that answer. How about impossibility? Right? So Job is walking as we walk. And as we walk our lives until God deals with us and calls us, we have no way of communicating with God. We can cry out to God all we want, but until God is ready to talk to you, what are you going to do about it? You're going to have to wait on God. David said, I was shaped in my sins and iniquities. Do you think you're any different than King David? He had to walk through a lot of things. God spoke to me when I was a very young child. I was in a little Nazarene church in Wheatersburg, Ohio. And he spoke to me, and I despised going to church, as a lot of little kids did, because they went because mom and dad made them go. And mom and dad made me go. And mom and dad would pull up right in front of the church and they'd say, hurry up and get out, hurry up and get out, because they wouldn't pull off the road. And that way it'd give them an excuse they couldn't stay there long enough for someone to talk to them. Push all 8 kids out as quick as they could and zoom away. And they knew exactly what time to pick us up, because you know God never went past that certain time. See? So he'd always show up at a certain time to pick us up. So he'd come back. Well, I didn't like what they did. I didn't like the way people treated people. And God spoke to me, and I had a lot of time sitting in this little church and several others, because my grandfather on my stepmother's side was a apostolic Pentecostal bishop of the state of Kentucky. So I got drug around a lot of little places. And I got to look at a lot of preachers. And I formed this opinion about preachers. And I said, God, make me anything. Make me a ditch digger, a honey dipper, anything you want, but don't make me a preacher. Whatever you do, don't make me a preacher. Because preachers were poorer than a church mouse. And I was poor. And they were poorer than me. And that was hard to believe, that anybody could be poorer than what I thought we were. And when I was 12 years old, that's when this old saying went around, you know, at 12 you come to the age of accountability. Not true, but that's what a lot of old people used to call it, old wives' tales, but you know, men carried them worse than women. So at that time I was getting right near 12, and at that age, you know, a lot of times children get to be a little rebellious. And I voiced myself of not liking to go to church. And it was one of the last times that I went, and God spoke to me. It probably was the last, if I could remember properly. He said, I'm calling you to preach. And he scared the living daylights out of me. He did exactly what he wanted. He knew that what I hated the most was exactly what he was going to put on me. So what do you think he did to me? I ran like a scared deer. I took off and ran so far in the world I thought I could run away from God. And all I could do was run into every circumstance that he had already set up before the foundation of the world. I run face to face, smack right into every wall that he set up just for me, and I smashed my face into every one of them wherever I went, all the way around the world, clear, I don't know how many thousand miles into Vietnam. Every one, God was right there. And I couldn't get away from him. No matter what I did, I couldn't get away. So we have to realize we can't think that we can get away from God. We've got to realize that God's got a plan, and we don't have to follow man's opinion or doctrines of churches to find God, because God ain't lost. I said that was emphasis so you understand. God ain't lost. I'm a hillbilly. I can say ain't. Humanity is lost, and God has the ability to find us. We're not lost to him. We're lost to ourselves. See? We're the ones wandering in the desert. And when it's time, he'll come and get us. And he wants us out there in that desert for a time. Show me in the book one man or woman of God that did not spend time in the desert. Everybody goes to the desert. And the worst desert there is, I could live in the desert with nobody easier than living in the desert with people all around me. That's even harder, because then you can't even communicate to something you can see. That's difficult, isn't it, when it's all around you? Okay? Verse 3. If he desires to contend with him, he cannot respond to him one of a thousand. He says, if me as a man, if I would choose to respond, or I desired to respond to God about one thing that he's doing to me, he said I couldn't get one thing out of a thousand right. Well, you know that's not very good odds. If I was a betting man, I don't think I'd want to bet on 1,000-to-1 odds. Would you? So why even try? The best thing to do is, if I don't know anything, is keep my mouth shut and wait on God to bring it to me. Talk to God, okay? He is wise in heart. He's talking about God now. He's wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who has hardened himself against him and has what? What's the King James say there? Wrong word. It should say, and who has been uninjured. Who has hardened himself against God and been uninjured? Who has stood up to God and said no? You know, that's one thing I never understood as a child. I questioned so many things that I heard in church. And, you know, but children were not allowed to speak. Back then, children were to be seen and not heard. A different generation from today. And I could not understand this. They would say God is omnipotent. He's omnipresent. He's all-powerful, all-knowing. He knows everything. He's got all the power in the world. By speaking, the world was. And that me as a mere grain of dust can stand up to him and say no. Does that make any sense to you? If I have the ability to say no to God, why would someone worship God? Because I could tell him no. If you can stand up to God and tell him no, then we should be worshiping you instead of God, because you have more authority than him if you can say no to him. If he can command the sea to lay still, if he can command all the stuff to happen the way it happens, and it doesn't ever stand up and say, did the sea say, no, I'm not going to lay still? Did the wind say, no, I'm going to keep on blowing? It stopped when he spoke. Do you really think that a human being has the capacity to say no to a God with such power? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to my mind. I'm just saying you should think. And questioning is a wonderful thing. I know in denominational churches they do not permit you to challenge what's being spoken. But I challenge you to challenge me. As you challenge me, if I make a mistake, you'll make me find the right answer. You'll make me back up and apologize for saying something wrong, and I will do it. I've done it before. Anyone's been around here a while has heard me. If I've said something wrong and I found out I made a mistake, I'll come back and correct it. Because it's not about me being right, it's about me saying what is right. Okay? It's not about me. Prospered means uninjured. Well, and you wouldn't be uninjured either, would you? Okay. There, you have to realize that a lot of this language has many flows to it. And you get a flow to it, and you go to that flow, and you stay with the flow wherever the flow goes. And there's other ways you can get off on side paths, and there's words that have multiple meanings. Some of those meanings will tie to it, and some won't. That's all. Okay? Have no problem with that. Verse 5. Who removes the mountains and they know not. Means he can turn the mountains upside down, throw them in the sea, do anything he wants to them, and who even knows about it? God doesn't go around bragging. Hello? How many times did Jesus cure somebody, heal somebody, raise somebody from the dead and say, hey, go rent a billboard down by the synagogue and tell everybody I'm going to have another healing crusade. Did God ever do that? He always said, shh, don't tell nobody. Don't tell nobody. God knew that the multitudes thronging him in the flesh as Jesus the man, all it would do would hinder him from doing the work he had to do. That's all he knew. True sons of God will never draw attention to yourself. You'll always try to point it to the Father. Every time someone tried to worship Jesus, what was his words? Don't worship me, worship God. See, Paul never said anything about worshiping Jesus. He said, worship the Christ within me. Christ, the Spirit of God. That's what we are to worship. Because God is what? A spirit. Okay? Which overturns them in his passion. Who shakes the earth out of her place. Her place. Why would he use the word her when talking about the earth? Because the earth is what we are made from. And this is the soulish side. This is the soulish part of my life. This flesh. It's soulish. See, spirit, you can't see. Okay? You can't see that spirit. And the pillars thereof do what? Tremble or quiver. Who commands the sun and it rises not. You know, in the book of Kings, didn't God stop the sun? Didn't he cause the sun to back up? 15 degrees or 10 degrees, was it? 10 degrees. But he said, anything anybody can make it go forward, because it always goes forward. He said, make it go backwards. It was King Ahab, one of the kings, the evil king that God was going to kill. And well, he was going to die because he was evil, and the prophet went to him and told him that, and he said, no. He said, God said, you're going to die. Set your house in order. And he said, he repented, and before the prophet got very far down the road, he said, go back and tell him he's going to live because I heard him repent. So go back and tell him he's going to live. And he said, well, prove it to me. Make the sundial go back 10 degrees. And science has even proven that that happened. They have proven that that has happened because of the clocks that they do now, these atomic clocks. They can go back and see that there was things done back then. It's at some time past. Okay? But he commanded the sun, and it rises not, and he sealed up the stars. What do you think the stars there are? When he said he commands the sun not to stand, and I showed you a natural example of it. But what does the sun represent? The S-U-N represents the S-O-N. Okay, the light, the truth of God. And the stars represent who? The first fruit sons of God. In Genesis 37, we have the Joseph has his dream that he expresses to his father, and his father translates it to him and says, shall I and your mother and your 11 sons, which brothers, you know, 11 brothers worship you? So it showed the stars were the sons of Abraham. That's right. Who alone spreads out the heavens and treads upon the waves of the sea. Now, if you just read this, it sounds like somebody had some real bad mushrooms or something. I mean, you know, listen what it says. It doesn't, to the natural mind, it doesn't, you don't grasp it. Which alone spreads out the heavens and treads upon the waves of the sea. If we don't understand the language of the kingdom of God, the waves of the sea, what is the sea? It's a multitude of humanity. And the humanity is always boiling and seething like a rough sea. And he said God still walks upon this sea of humanity. No matter how bad we think we are, God has never given up on us, and God never will. That's the beauty of the gospel. That's the good news of the gospel. Not the maybe gospel, but the for sure thing. God will never give up on us. That's the beautiful thing. Okay? Which makes Arcturus, and that's the great bear, Orion, the great hunter, and Placides is the seven daughters of Atlas, and the chambers of the south. They're all constellations of the stars, of the sky. I didn't break all this down. I had a book a man borrowed from me one time, and I think I've asked him about 15 times to bring it back to me, and so I guess he stole it or I just gave it to him. I don't know which, so I'll just go buy a new one. But there was a lot of things in there I wanted to bring out, and I couldn't get a hold of the book again, so I'm just going to go buy a new book. He wants it so bad he's going to keep it, I guess. So. Yes? Of Atlas. Now, Atlas, and Atlas in the stars represents Christ. Yeah, in astrologies. And see, astrology is not a bad thing if you go back to what it really is. If you go back to Genesis, there's two gospel accounts. There's two accounts of the creation, one in the earth and one in the heavens. And in the one in the heavens is the constellations. And if you can look at all these constellations and get by all this New Age stuff they talk about and look about the origin of what this stuff started from God, it's the whole gospel written in the stars. Absolutely. Day unto day it utters. Okay? Psalm 19, I believe it is, where that is. Okay. Who does great things past finding, yea, and wonders without number. See, God don't tell us every time he creates a miracle. If he did, we'd never have time to do anything but just listen to him brag about himself. And God's not into doing that. See? He's just doing so many wonderful miracles. That's it. He just, I am. Whatever you need, I am. Exodus 3:14. Lo, he goes by me, and I see him not. He passes on also, but I perceive him not. Do you think he was speaking as a spiritual man right there? He was speaking as a natural man. He's telling you, on my day-to-day life, I go and do things, and God walks right by me every day, and I don't see him. How many of us are guilty of not seeing God every day as he walks by us? Okay? Because every human being that walks by you, God's in that person. And we fail to see God in that person because we get so wrapped up in our own circumstances. That's all it is. Now, did he say we was bad because of that? No. He's just trying to point something out and show you, hey, slow down a little bit. Take time to recognize God in this thing. Recognize God in this person that's got an attitude that's nasty and vile, mean, speaks nasty to you. You know why that person's doing that? Because they're missing their father. That's the only reason. He said, but I perceive him not. Know that every human being on the face of the earth misses that relationship with their father that they had before the foundation of the world. And I heard an old saying years ago, an empty drum makes the most noise. And many times when people are angry and hurting, they're very vile and loud. And it's a self-protection thing they have to try to protect themselves from the pain. They don't want you to see the pain that they're feeling. Kind of like that. And if you notice what they chose to cover themselves with, what was it? Fig leaves. Fig tree and fig leaves is symbolism of religion. See, they try to cover themselves with religion, with their own ideas and their own thinking. It won't work. The only thing you can do is face the pain of the change and go on. Let God be God. Behold, he takes away, and who can hinder him? Who will say to him, what do you do? What are you doing? You know what? Every one of us has said that. Every one of us has lost a loved one that we didn't want to see go. We thought they died before their time, but it wasn't our timing it was set with. It was his timing. If God will not withdraw his anger, and the word here for God is the one, is Eloah, it's the one true God. If the one true God will not withdraw his anger, the proud helpers do stoop under him. Now the word proud here is a funny word. You know why? It says it's a symbolic name for Egypt. It's the word Rahab. Pretty amazing. How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? He's saying, what's the purpose of it? Why should I try to reason with God who knows everything, who has everything at the tip of his tongue? Whom though I were righteous, excuse me, or right, would I not answer or literally respond? Okay? But I would implore mercy of my judge. He said, I may not respond to what we were saying, but the one thing I will do is this. I will ask God for mercy. And there's one thing I know in Psalm 77. David said he laid on his pillow, his bed at night, and he slept, and he had six questions to ask. And I can't remember all six of them, but it's in Psalm 77, verse about six or seven, down for several more verses. And one of them was, will his mercy cease forevermore? And there's a question mark there. That was not a statement. It was a statement with a question mark. Do you think God's mercy will ever cease? Well, of course not. And we need to understand that. If I understand that God's mercy will never, ever cease, it does not give me a license to go do anything I want to do. And there's where people go afoul teaching the kingdom of God and the reconciliation of all. It's not a license, it's called liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Paul said, all things are lawful to me, but not everything's profitable. We have to know the difference between taking a license to do something and having the responsibility and the liberty that he gives us. Understand? If I had called and he had responded to me, yet would I not believe that he had listened to my voice? Tell me what this man is thinking. He's thinking, am I really talking to God? He knows there is a God, but does he believe for 1 minute he really, really believes there's a God? He's saying, if there's a God as awesome as this, do you think that he would believe me? You think he would take time to hear me, this little grain of dust down here on this earth, this little speck of sand? No. See? And that's what there's doubt in his words. He said, even if he heard me, do I really believe he'd respond to me? Do I really believe it? And that's what he's asking. How many of you have said something to God and asked a prayer to God and said, God, I really, 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 really desire this thing, and yet it didn't come to pass. So tomorrow, what'd you do? And it didn't happen that day. And what'd you do the next day? But see, and God answered the first time. See, God has three answers. Yes, no, and in my time. And when it's my time, what you ask for, and it's in my time, you will receive what you ask for. So we get too impatient. Again, we have to wait upon the Lord to renew our strength. Don't get impatient. Wait upon the Lord. It'll all come together. What do you think would have happened to all those people out of Hebrews 11 if they wouldn't have waited? You think their names would be listed in that book? I think Hebrews 11 would read a whole lot differently. Okay, verse 17. Because he bruised me with a hurricane and increased my wounds undeservedly. He's saying, hey, I didn't do anything. I'm just living my life. Has any one of us that hasn't been injured or done wrong while we were doing nothing to deserve it? I guarantee you, every one of us have. But see, didn't Paul write to Timothy? If you do something evil and are punished for it, you have no thank in that. But if you do something good and you're punished for that, this is well-pleasing unto God. What do you think Paul wrote that in there? He'd been through it. He put it in there to help us understand what was written back here. Because Paul wrote no new thing. All Paul did was had a revelation of Christ from the Old Testament. And he brought that revelation of Christ into the reality of now. It's not something in the heavens, but it's something within you. It's a reality now. It's not something to hope for. We're in him. He lives in us. See, it's no longer that thing up there somewhere. It's in us. That's where it's all at now. He will not permit me to return to my breath. He will not permit me to return to my spirit. What's he saying? I want to go back to where I was in the beginning. We were with God in the beginning. We were with him before the foundation of the world. He said he won't permit me to go back there yet. You know why? It's not yet time. It's God's time. We don't get to choose. He's the author and the finisher of our faith. He started it. He'll finish it. It's not up to you and it's not up to me. God, how many times have we not said, God, just take me and get it over with? See? But see, we're not done yet. We can say, but I ain't cussed this week. I ain't spit at nobody. I ain't rated nobody number one that cut me off in the traffic this week. I ain't done none of them things, God. See, that's not what it's all about. What's in your heart this week? How many times was you upset with your spouse? How many times were you upset with somebody who had nothing to do with anything in your life? They were just in front of you somewhere and just created a problem. Do you think Jesus one time ever in his heart had a hard feeling toward anybody? I don't. I don't believe it for a minute. So you know what? As long as I could have a hard feeling towards you, my brother, or anybody else, then I'm not ready. And that means I got to endure until the end, until I'm totally delivered from my thinking process. When I'm delivered from my thinking process, then I know I'm ready to go. But you know, Paul got there because he said, I could go on and be with the Lord. It'd be better for you if I'd stay though, so I'm going to stay. And I'll say the same thing. If he wants me to stay, I'll stay. It doesn't make any difference anymore. I want to do what he wants. Because it's not labor, it's not work anymore, it's not a job anymore. This is a labor of love. This is not something that I have to do on Sundays. This is something I do every day of my life. And I don't care if I'm in a restaurant, if I'm in a grocery store, whatever city, town, if I'm on a river, if I'm out on the street talking to somebody, this is my life. And it changed me. If it changed me, it can do the same thing for you. You hear what I'm saying? It's not for one. God's not a respecter of persons. He don't respect me more than he does you, does he? You got to let it make it be alive in you. Yes.
It's just resting in here and enjoying the ride.
Just hang on for the ride because he's driving. Just let him have it. Where to leave off in 19? If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong. And if I speak of judgment, and literally, it should be verdict, I believe. Who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, my own mouth shall condemn me. Remember what I said earlier, how someone drew my attention to my words? I hope somebody or all of you hear what I said. Listen to what you say. Very few people listen to what they say. While they're saying, they're thinking about what they're going to respond to what you're going to say back to them. Listen to what you say as well as what the person speaking to you is saying. If nothing else, it's being polite. It's rude for someone to talk to you and you have your mind somewhere else. You might as well not be there if you can't take the time to listen to what that person has to say. Because when that person speaks to you, many times what they say can give you volumes of information about needs in their life or else things they omit. They don't tell you that they should be telling you. But by not telling you, it's telling you. You hear what I say? Learn to listen. And when I say learn to listen, not just to everyone else, but to yourself. Jesus was one of the best listeners in the world. Did he ever stop people from talking? He listened to them, didn't he? And when he listened to them, he responded. And he said he responded to their hearts. He heard what went on in their heart. He knew by what they said or what they didn't say, he knew what was going on in there. See? And you can do the same thing if you'll listen to your words. Don't just throw words because you have the floor or have the ability to speak. Listen to what they say. And if we're going to be like him, and the book says we are to be like him, correct? Then I have to learn to listen. Just like those nine fruits of the Spirit. I can't have them all lumped together if I don't learn to listen, because it's part of his nature. His total nature in that one fruit is love, but there's lots of different portions that are all blended in there that makes that love. And see, if I say I love you and you're trying to talk to me and I got my mind somewhere else, am I loving you back? See, I'm not loving you if my mind's somewhere else, distracted into some other thing. I should be listening to you. And see, if we'll learn to love each other in that way, to talk to each other, listen, you know what you'll become? You'll become intimate with each other. You'll be able to know each other. And you'll come to a place where you won't even have to tell each other you've got a problem or got a need, because you will sense what that person has, because you'll become one. And that was the prayer of Jesus of John 17. Father, make them one with me, as I am one with you. As you do that, you become one with each other. Guess who you're becoming one with? The Spirit, the deep, calls into the deep within each one of us. That's what he's talking about. That's what he's talking about. Where am I at again? 20. If I justify myself, my own mouth shall condemn me. If I am perfect, if I say I am perfect, I shall also prove me perverse. We can't. Words don't do it, does it? It's not what I say, but it's what I do. See? Don't follow someone's words. If you listen to the words, they will deceive you. Watch where they walk. Watch their lifestyle. Watch how they live their life, because that's what they are. See, you are what you do, not what you think. Though I I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my not life, but soulish life. He said, if I were perfect, perfect means what? Mature. It means spiritually mature. He said, I would despise my soulish life. When you come to a place, and I think Job does in here, we'll understand that later on, Job despises his natural flesh. You know, and in times he says, let the worms have it. It'd been better that I wasn't born. We've already went through that part. Okay. But as you mature, you'll realize this is the thing that you hate the worst, this life in this flesh. Because you begin to remember, the Spirit calls to remembrance the life we had with God before the foundation of the world. And you'll desire there so much that you will despise this life that you have now. No matter how good of a life you have now, it makes no difference. Because it can't compare to the life we had before the foundation of the world. This is one thing, therefore, I said it. He destroyed the perfect and the wicked. He destroyed who? The mature, the good and the evil. Both. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, the good and the evil, they both die alike. Don't all go to one place? Don't they all go to one place? The good and the evil. Pretty clear, I think. Huh? There's another place that says it. There's another one. Yeah, there's another one before that. Verse 23. If the whip kills instantly, he will mock at the trial of the innocent. It says, if judgment comes quickly, they will laugh at the trial of the innocent. Solomon asked the same question. Why do the good die and the wicked prosper? Y'all seen any of that? You seen good people suffer some of the most cruel, harshest conditions you could ever never wish upon any person, and yet wicked people prosper and just go on. You seen it? I know you've all seen it. I've seen it. I had a man ask me that years ago, and I couldn't answer. I said, all I know is God's in control. That's the only answer I could give him. I didn't know at the time. But see, now I know something different. I know now that our treasure is laid into the spirit realm, where the thieves can't break through and steal, the moths can't corrupt it, and the rust can't eat it up, see? But those wicked that are prospering now, they have their reward now. And when it comes time to cross to the other side, I know they'll not be sitting on a throne, living, ruling, and reigning with our Lord. But the ones who laid their treasure into the spirit realm, I know where they'll be sitting. The others then, sorry about your luck. It's not my call. See, it's something God called, and it's something we got to do right now. It's something we don't even have a choice of. I don't feel I have any choice at all in this matter. I got to do what I got to do. It's something inside of me says do it, and I got to do it. I don't have any choice in it. I don't want a choice in it. How's that? I don't want it because I know if I make choices, I make mistakes. If God makes choices, there's never a mistake because he's never lied to me. He's never missed a call on anything he's ever told me. And see, that's part of the pattern. Remember Samuel? He was a type of Christ. And if you go into Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 2 or 3 I think it is, he was sleeping in the Holy of Holies, which kills that old wives' tale about it. No priest could go into the holy place except they would die. Samuel, as a child, slept with the Ark of the Covenant. All it was, it said, from the very beginning, he was a son of God, and he slept with God. Guess what we do? Same thing. We can sleep with God right now. The Holy of Holies is in here. Okay? We're right there today. See, they didn't understand. That's old tales. Anyway, put me back to where I was at. 24. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He, God, covers the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Okay, that does it. God covers the faces of the judges. It said God creates good and evil in Isaiah 9:5, I believe it is. He creates light, peace, darkness, and evil. I, the Lord, do all these things. Jeremiah 3:3, shall there be trumpet in the city and the people not be afraid? Shall there be evil in a city and I, the Lord, has not done it? Got to have positive, negative to drive this life force we have. If we don't have life, positive and negative, nothing works in this whole universe without those two things, positive and negative. God created both of them to make it work. If I didn't have wickedness, how would I know what righteousness was? I'd have to have an example of righteousness to know what wickedness was. You could look at either direction, see the difference, but you got to have them there as a difference. And he controls the judges. Why do judges sometimes cheat the righteous and give to the wicked? God has a purpose beyond our control. I had the circumstance where it happened to me once, and I was very upset, and I didn't yell out to God except in my heart, God, why did you let these uncircumcised Philistines rob me of $8,000? And they owed it to me. They really did. He says, because the attitude of your heart. End of discussion. I got nothing to say no more. What could I say? I was wrong. And I knew I was wrong because that company agreed to pay me $8,000 more the day before. And I listened to a greedy attorney that told me I should hang on for a couple more days and I'd probably end up with another $5,000 to $10,000 more. And I lost $8,000 by being greedy. He said, attitude of your heart, son. You had more money than what you had more than what you had invested. They had the penalties they had to pay. I would have come out ahead if I'd have took the offer. I waited 2 days because, listen, somebody shouldn't, took the wrong counsel. Wasn't godly counsel. It was ungodly counsel. And it cost me. And when he said it was the attitude of my heart, let it go. I learned a lesson. I don't do that no more. Okay? Verse 25. Now my days are swifter than a post. The word post is not correct. It's a runner. My days are swifter than a runner. They flee away. They see no good. As we get older, each of the older ones of the group here, don't we all say that? Where does week go? Where does month go? Where does year go? My God, days are flying by like seconds. It seems that way, doesn't it? Job's getting older as he goes through his life. He's experiencing these things just like us. There's no difference. Just because this is King James language doesn't mean he isn't saying the same thing we're saying. We're experiencing the same thing. And I never seem to see nothing good out of the day. Sit around and listen to people all day long. Listen to the murmuring and complaining. See if you hear anything good out of them. How many of them do you hear saying, isn't it a wonderful day? Isn't it beautiful? Isn't it wonderful all the things God's done in our lives? Look at the people out there. They're enjoying life. And you see them, everybody else sees them murmuring and complaining. Say, what do you got to complain about? Oh, my knee hurts. Well, what about the guy over there ain't got a leg? Come on. I mean, be happy you got a knee that hurts. Huh? Come on. You always got something to be thankful for. There's always somebody in a worse condition than you are. I know people get sick of hearing me saying things, but every time they say, oh, you say it all the time. I said, well, it's just in my heart. That's all I can say. I can't lie to you. How's the day today? It's wonderful. Outstanding. That's what you always say. I know it's the truth. It's an outstanding day. Every day is outstanding. It's one he made for me. Right? He He made it for me, didn't he? Didn't he make it for you? Then you ought to be tickled plum pink that God made you a day just for you. Just for you. He said they are passed away as the clipper ships, as the eagle that pounces upon the prey. And that's pretty quick, isn't it? Days are going by pretty quick. If I say I will forget my complaint, I will forsake my heaviness and smile. What's he saying? He said, if I do all these things, I am afraid of all my, I fear all my sorrows. I know that you will not hold me innocent. He's saying, if I just fake it, oh, everything's great. But inside you're so mad you could spit nails, bite nails into. He said, you're not going to hold me innocent. You know why? Because God judges the thoughts and intents of the heart, not your actions. The heart, your thinking process. See? Faking it won't do you any good. If I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? Why do I do it in vanity? You know what the word vain means here? It's the word habale. It's 1092, I believe, or 1892. It's something transitory and unsatisfactory. He said, why then am I laboring in something that's temporary and unsatisfactory? Why am I faking it? What's the purpose of it? If it's not going to do me any good, why do it? Someone tell me. He knows my heart, but if I'm doing something that's not going to do me any good, and I know it and God knows it, what's the purpose? I'm only lying to myself. I got this little thing because lying is something that's inherent in humanity. And I've had to deal with it as much as anybody else has. And I've got these little sayings in my office. One is, when you lie the loudest when you lie to yourself. See? You lie to yourself enough, you'll believe it. God, I know people that tell stories that nobody on the face of the earth could believe but them. But they believe it because they've told it so many times. They believe it. Okay? If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands clean with lye, what it should say, yet you shall plunge me in a ditch or a pit, and my own clothes shall abhor me. What was he saying there? What was he saying in verse 30 and 31? He said, if I clean myself up, if I scrub myself with lye soap, just scrub the hide plumb off of me. He said, if I wash myself with snow water, make my hands ever so clean, yet you shall plunge me in the pit, a grave. You're going to die just the same. It won't make you any better. My own clothes shall abhor me. My own righteousness is but filthy rags, Isaiah said. It's not going to do you any good. He said, because he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him and we should come together in judgment. See, God doesn't come to us and says, I mean, at least I never have. I don't know if you all have, tell me. But God's never come to me. I've never got the phone and said, hello, Dave. Is this Dave? Yeah. Well, this is God. What do you think I should do today? See, I've never got one of them calls. Have you? I've never had God say, Dave, what do you think I should do? I never have. And you know what? I'm not going to hold my breath waiting on one. I'm going to wait and listen to him. When he wants me to hear something, he said, my sheep hear my voice. So when he wants me to hear something, I know he's very capable of speaking to me what I need to hear. He's capable to speak to you. As I speak, I've told you before, don't listen to me. Listen to God in you as I speak. Let him tell you what he wants you to hear out of what I'm saying. Neither is there any judge, the word daysman should be judge, neither is there any judge between us that might lay his hands upon us both. Let him take his rod, and that word rod there is a rod of correction. What it should say, rod of correction. Let him take his rod of correction away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him. But it's not so with me. He's saying, if you'd take it away, I would, but since God still got his rod of correction, I'm not saying anything to God. Well, I got news for you. I had a discussion with a lady years ago. She got so mad, she cussed me. She was a good Catholic. But she cussed me because I told her God wasn't listening to her prayers. And as I got further along in my understanding, I realized, well, maybe I could have been wrong in this thing. And then as I got further along, I thought, no, now I realize I was right in my understanding, but wrong in my presentation. Wrong in my attitude of my heart toward her because of what church she went to. See? If God has not birthed me, God is what, first of all? God is spirit. God is spirit. Okay? His composition, spirit. The only way we can worship him is in spirit and truth. Okay, so if I am a natural person that God has not woke up yet, could I communicate with God? Could I? It's impossible, see? So I know until God opens up me, germinates the Spirit, just like Mary, when the Holy Spirit came upon Mary and she was impregnated and gave birth to Jesus the Son. The same way the Son will be birthed in you. When the Holy Spirit comes upon you at Father's timing, he will come upon you, and in your woman, your soul, he will impregnate you with the Spirit of God, and that same Son Christ will be birthed in you and be birthed from you in time. Okay. But until that time, and that's where he was at, he had not yet got to know God. Going to, but not yet. Okay? So I've learned in my process. I've made many mistakes in my process. And out of zeal, we make mistakes. As we get so enthusiastic for God, and someone, oh, Ed was saying it earlier about the one wanting to drive God down somebody's throat. See, I don't get upset with people like that. I understand they're wrong, but I've been there. And as God works in you and you get so excited about the life of God in you, you want to give it to somebody so bad that you don't realize what you're doing to them. And in King David and King Saul's life, I use the example, there was a song they sang in the spring as they went out to do battle. Well, King David was coming back because King Saul should have been out where there was battle going on, but he was letting David, who was hadn't yet took his place, do his work for him. And as he came back, the women were singing, "Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his tens of thousands." And Saul got angry and tried to kill David. See? And in our zeal, God permits us to kill our tens of thousands because he doesn't want to take away that zeal. He wants to temper it. If you throw water on a fire and put the fire out, the fire is no good. You just got to get the fire controlled. Get it tempered, all in the right place. And then God can use it to refine and not to consume you. That's all God's wanting to do. See, he won't change your nature. He gave you the nature he gave you. See, if you're a person of many words, he'll give you many words to say, but you'll say them out of your natural man. But when it comes, when God changes your nature to where it's the godly nature, now you'll say godly words. That's all. He'll take that same nature he gave you and he'll just transpose it from the natural to the spiritual. What did he do with Peter, who was a natural fisherman? What did he do? What did he make him? What did he take? What did he do with John? What was John? Net mender. What did he do in the Gospels? What did he do in his work? He made corrections to all the mistakes coming up. He was the last one living of the living apostles, of those 12 apostles. He got to correct. What about Paul? Paul was a what? Tent maker. What did he do in the spiritual? He built churches, set up churches. See, God didn't change a personality. He only changed the information that's in there and put it in there with that same personality. So God don't make mistakes. He makes you the way you're supposed to be. I'm done. Anybody else got anything to say?